Father in heaven, we thank you for this day. We thank you for this time that we can be together and be edified further on your word for George. We're glad that George is in good health, and we are glad to be here. And we thank you for so many of your gifts, all of your gifts, most of all the gift of your Son, Jesus, through whom we can know how to love and love one another more fully. Amen.
Thank you.
Yay!
Hey, a couple weeks ago we prayed for my sister-in-law.
Yes.
She died this morning.
Oh.
She died in her sleep about 3 o'clock. She just stopped breathing. She was at home. One of her longtime friends was asleep on the couch next to her, and when the stuff shut off, but her lungs had quit pumping. She had cancer for 16 months, but pneumonia actually was over. So she, actually, the night that we talked about that, the Catholic priest did last rites, she woke up and said, "Don't turn the stuff off." So they put a tracheotomy in her, and she actually lasted for a couple of weeks. So, but she died this morning. So, that's morning. So, thank you. Pray for grace and strength and wisdom on that.
Well, those who depart from this life, I believe, have a better one. And how is the eyes of this young man sitting next to you?
Real good.
Can you see me?
Who said
that? Yes?
But he's having surgery on next Thursday.
Another one?
Another surgery.
What have you been doing?
This is prostate.
Getting old.
Oh. Well, don't worry. In our old age, we catch, all of us men, we catch up with you. So you are not the only one.
Yep. Get it from both
Vince and I, huh?
Vince had a little turn in the hospital. I think he gave some visits to the heart center a couple weeks ago. Or...
Who?
Vince.
What's wrong with you?
Well, I did a stent or two.
Three.
Stent?
Three stent.
Well, in the hospital.
But you are lucky. They did not open you up.
You got that right.
Ask me twice. You know, I have to be blessed, you know.
I was wide awake when they did all that stuff.
Yes, but they can give you something like Valium or...
Well, just about.
Yeah.
I said, "How's it look?" He said, "It looks off."
But you know, with such a lovely lady next to you, you will have another 100 years ahead of you.
I got eternity.
You got eternity in heaven, but eternity here, I think, will be a real problem.
Yes, I do.
Right. Well, there's a little bit of heaven here.
You know, my grandmother used to say to me, "Eternity here on earth, each one of my teeth will grow up, will become about a meter long, and my fingers will be longer than an elephant trunk." You know, she had a very vivid imagination, and I'll drag my hair behind me. You know, and I was young, about 10 or 11, and so some nights I used to dream about her. And one night I said, "Please don't switch the light off, because I can see you in eternity." You know, with your toes and your hands. Yes, sir.
George, as a Jewish scholar, how do you see the enormous age, Methuselah and all those people? What is the story?
You know, Russ, there is a book. God is having his own cunning ways. This lady sitting here, our neighbor Ellie, took us to a bookshop that I never heard of. For years I have been looking for a book by Ginsberg called The Legends of the Jews. It's very expensive to buy it on Amazon. It's about $200. And I walk in and I found the paperback edition, the 7 volumes complete. In my great anxiety, I took it straight to the cashier to buy it. When I put them, I found the volume 4 is missing. That's why it was reduced. So I argued with the lady, and she said, no, I can buy volume 4 from the Amazon. So I said, well, one volume from Amazon is better than than buying the whole. So I got the book, because I used to hear the stories of the Jews from my grandmother since I can remember. Judaism is a great religion. Forgive me by saying, I have not met a Jew ever took the Old Testament in the literal sense. Only Christians are guilty of that.
In the literal sense?
Yes. Have not met one single one. And I've started to write a book, actually called The Rabbi and the Hermit. And the Rabbi is about Rabbi Tichel, who taught me rabbinics in Cambridge, and the Hermit is Philemon. Comparing how the two look at the Bible. Of course, Philemon was not a scholar of anything, but he had his own insights. Now, in Ginsberg, they say these figures are given in a round figure, Because, you see, in the old culture, numbers had meanings. And as you know, that each letter in the Hebrew alphabet has a number. That the Aleph, the A is 1, the Bet or the Base is 2, and so forth. So you can convert a number to letters or letters to numbers. I mean, people do it. You must have heard about this mathematician in an American university who published a big book called The Bible Code about the assassination of Rabin and the Third World War. And, his method is very rabbinic. Very rabbinic. I mean, correct. But I don't believe that we should take that seriously. In a sense, that when it says that Samson killed 100 men, or 1,000, it doesn't actually mean, counting them. But he killed too many, like 1,000. So people who lived a long life in the rabbinic literature, in Ginsberg and the others, are looked at in three different ways. Number one, that people, human beings, before eating meat, had a long life. Now, I am not in the medical profession, and I think there's one lady sitting here at the end, She's a dietitian, and are you in the medical also? How true is that? I have no idea. Even Bernard Shaw, the Irish writer, wrote a book called The Return of Methuselah, Matushaleh in Hebrew, much better, advocating vegetarian food. I don't know about the medical side of it. Whether our life is shortened by what we eat or not, I cannot tell you. So they say that these people belong to the period where human beings lived long life because of food, because there was no wars, nothing to disturb their peace. So their life went longer and longer and longer because they had a quiet life. I thank you for that word, because I personally believe, that is from the Faculty of Medicine in Cambridge, that 90% of our illness is caused by distress. The more we advance in communication and knowledge, I was coming, we stand in the car, we're stuck in the traffic, and I get a telephone call on my mobile telephone from Egypt. Ask Stan, it lasted for about 20 minutes. All the news that I don't want to hear about, believe me. And I kept interrupting them, and I'm going to a church meeting. Would you give me a few minutes to pray so the Lord can clean my mind from all the horrible things I heard? But he continued. I was distressed over the, truly distressed, I'm still distressed about the resignation of Kimber Kaufman, the senior minister of College Park. I received a letter from the elders today in the mail. We don't know. He was taking a painkiller and became addicted to it. That is the true story. How far, I don't really know. For me, I don't like to intrude into personal life of anyone. And I was extremely distressed. I attended a meeting on Tuesday, yesterday, and I went back home absolutely ill, very depressed. It's all about what's happening in church. I regretted going, believe me. Now, if we live through that, what do you expect our heart, our kidneys, our blood system, whatever, can function correctly? And, you know, I would just tell me, if you woke up in the morning and foolishly put the telly on, and you see a terrorist executing an American by cutting off his head, or either the internet or in the satellite, how does this color the whole of your day? I mean, I was telling Stan, you know, I foolishly, after I had breakfast, put the local station there. Four boys robbed people at gunpoint on the Monan. That is the place where I like I like to go. You know, the police caught them, but, you know, we were talking how life became, you know, so cheap. And young people grow up, don't know the cost of living anymore. They don't. I tell you, when I was in the Red Cross, I interviewed two Palestinians who were preparing themselves to become suicide bombers. 16, 17 years old. I still have that on cassettes in Arabic. And, you know, three things emerged of the interview. Number one, they have no sense of what we call death, mortality. They are young, they are strong, their bodies are in a complete health according to medical reports, and they don't know what does it mean to be crippled or to die. They don't. No concept of death in their head. And that is quite natural for people at that age. When they reach our age, then they start to get frightened. Or if they become ill, you see? And none of the suicide bombers ever was ill. They all are in good health. Can you imagine? And number two, there is no concept of what we call in English future. What is future? No future. You know, people say, when are you going to buy a car? That's future for me. I still am saving to buy a hammer car.
Hammer car. Hammer.
Yes.
Hammer.
A hammer car.
You
yes.
said they drink gas.
Sounds like hammer car.
No, you know, I... You know, and I said to her, you know, we'll drive to Florida. And then she said, by going to Florida, it means that you leave every petrol station completely dry. And, you know, you dream, no future. And number three, and that is important, no sense of belonging to a good community that supports them to find a good way of life. It's a depressed community of the refugees living in shanty towns in West Beirut, and no future. The greatest thing is we'll prove that we are better than you by going and killing Israelis and killing ourselves. Finding glory in death is rather unusual for a young age, and that's why I became interested. And so, would these people live for 900 years? It doesn't bother me because, in a sense, it is possible because life was absolutely great. I mean, don't you feel when you go on a holiday and you cut off the telephone and the internet and the email and everything? What's a great island near USA? Hawaii.
Hawaii.
People have been saying to me, why don't you go to Hawaii? I said, if you pay for the ticket, I'll go. It's as simple as that. And you know, I have been to certain places in the world. I've been to Cyprus. And when I go to Cyprus, cut off every communication. Don't you feel you can run, you can walk, you eat very well, you're enjoying life, don't you? Why is that? Because there's nothing can disturb your inner peace. Your mind, your memory, your body function very well. So, and who told me? Oh, yes, from Department of Medical Environment. I didn't know that. I met an English doctor who had an office just across the corridor from my office. And he came to have coffee with me, and he saw me taking some penicillin. He took the bottle and put it in the bin. I said to me, George, how could you, as a man of great intelligence, drink, eat that poison? I said, I have a chest infection. And he said, yes, but every time you go and take an antibiotic, you weaken your immunity system. And then I said, I'll go and get the, injection for anti-chest infection. What's that called? No. It's an injection for a vaccine.
Vaccination.
Against anti-flu and anti-pneumonia, no?
Yeah.
And he said, do you know, George, if I'm in your place, I will take the pneumonia and go through it.
Oh, dear.
And will build up my immunity. And he said, you will take the antibiotics and the vaccine, but you have to take it every year? Or every 5 years, something like that?
Yeah.
And he said, what we have been producing in medication has reduced our ability to cope with bacteria. And he said, do you know, the bacteria and the viruses are rotating now to fight us. And you know, I am not in the medical, my father used to tell me all sorts of things. But you know, we don't eat well, we don't live well, we are distressed most of the time. So the expectancy of life in America is what, about 90?
A baby girl born today in the United States without any further medical advance has a life expectancy of 100 years. In 1900, the life expectancy was 48 years. And in George Washington's time, in 1800, the life expectancy was 38 years. And a baby boy born today's life expectancy is 95.
Yes,
in America.
Yes, unless they were killed by Bin Laden or...
Yeah. Well, no. Life expectancy at birth.
Yes, I understand you. But you know, the quality of life is not as good as it was before. I have a bad feeling about the kind of food we eat with all the chemical things injected in the vegetables and the meat.
They couldn't do any surgery before.
I'm sure it's not a birthday cake. I wouldn't worry about that.
Everybody died from infection after surgery.
Yes, that's true.
The operation's success, but the patient died. But when they got the antibiotics,
yes,
they could stop that infection.
Yes.
They can take your brain open, put it back, put it back in, sew it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a good joke. Here's a good joke for you, sir. When I was in the in England, one of our friends had a growth on his brain. And he came for a healing service. So the senior minister, we all laid hands on him. And the senior minister said, Lord Jesus Christ, help the doctors. When they opened his skull, they found nothing.
But you're right about anxiety. That's behind me.
And anxiety and stress.
Yeah.
I mean, stress, you know. I had a very stressful time for over Thanksgiving. We went to see our brother-in-law, and we met a couple that I used to know in Beirut. So that's about at least 35 years ago, if not more. They come from a very well-known Christian family, went through the university, did theology. The professors at the university destroyed their faith completely. So they left not only the church, but even Christianity, and became Buddhists. And you know, Thanksgiving, when the Turk is cooking, then it takes, lunch is normally about 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So these people came about 11, we had some tea, had some, something you call in America, cookies. Nice. And brownies, you know. Very good quality. And other things, you know, that I don't like to meet every day because I started to gain weight again, which is horrible. And the discussion starts from 11 till about 3 on Buddhism. And, you know, I wasn't anxious about anything, you know, but I became deeply distressed by two things. Number one, they never taught proper Christianity at the university. And number two, their understanding of Christian doctrine was no more than a mental, rational understanding of a doctrine that is no longer important in modern life. Both of them are psychotherapists, practicing. And they have been in the practice for 9 years. And then I said, I think the husband is the leader. I said to the husband, tell me, how does Buddhism help you in psychotherapy? And he looked at me as if I'm coming from a jungle, you know. Don't you know? I said, no, I am here to learn from you. And I really meant it. And he said, we teach people how to take care of their own inner life. And I said, but that's in Christianity also. And he said, no. I said, yes. And then instead of saying yes and no, yes and no, I said, okay, why don't you go on the internet? And I will bring some files that I know about how to take care of the inner life, how to meditate. If you have a Buddhist book on meditation, we have in Christianity at least 100 books on meditation. So the discussion went on and on and on till the Turk appeared from the oven to save them and to save me. First time to be saved by a Turk in my life, you know. I mean, that miserable animal is the best bird in the world that proves our what the word in English? Our ethnic bad feeling, you know. You call him Turkey in America. We call him Greek in Egypt. And in Lebanon, they call him Ethiopian. So the poor animal has so many nationalities. You know, Turkey, Greek, and Ethiopian, you know. God save us, you know. So I've been saved at least by Turkey, if not by Greek or by Ethiopian. So, you know. And we sat to eat. And I noticed he did not eat meat. Because it's forbidden Buddhism. And then, you know, just for fun, I cut a nice piece of meat, said, you know, Eric, would you like to have this piece of meat? And he said, no. I said, are you afraid that it could be the leg of your great-grandmother? You know, who came to us in her maybe 10th reincarnation? He looked very upset. His wife laughed. And I said, but you know, Eric, if that is part of the leg of your great-grandmother, I will eat it with delight. Because at least, you know, I can have a feeling of her leg. And he started to look at me. You know, and then he's, you know, I started to become a little bit brutal, you know. And I said to him, you know, she must have had good legs, you know. Look at the leg here. And then he's, you know, he said to me, are you sexually depraved, you know? I said, possibly, but you better ask my wife. My wife was there. She can answer that question better than me. But you know, I'm not sexually, I think you are humanly depraved. So he put his fork and knife and said, why did you say that? That's an insult. I said, I meant it to be an insult. Meant to be humanly depraved. Humanly depraved. That he's not human enough. I said to him, you know, look here, young man. No, look here. You know, sometimes, you know, to be a little bit impolite is good. Not always. Sometimes it's good. Works. I said, look here. We belong to the religion of God incarnate. The one who came not only to reveal God, but to reveal also humanity. Now, how much do you know about the human Jesus? Tell me. Because I'm quite happy to stand up here, leave that the leg of your great-grandmother, and to tell you what I know about the humanity of Jesus. There's no person in our human life who comes with such a force to invade our humanity more than Jesus. And he said, do you know why? And he said, no. I said, because he says, I am the truth. I am the life. I am the resurrection. I am the light of the world, you know? And he does this in a language, in a human language, and he says, if you follow me, you will get it. But what does Buddha say? Buddhism is self-negation. It is a religion of death, amputation. Christianity is a religion of building up the human person, of bringing us into full communion with God. Through our humanity, all of it, body and spirit, all of it. When you meditate as a Christian, you transfigure and transform your body. When you meditate as a Buddhist, you escape out of your body. Let's talk about that. I became a little bit aggressive, you know? And suddenly... a little bit. And my wife, you know, in Arabic, said to me, calm down. This is Thanksgiving. This is not the University of Cambridge. And I said, no, Christ put some energy in my bones. And if I shut up, I would feel ill. And you know, the discussion went on and on and on. On their way out, about almost 9 o'clock in the evening, you know, when they ran out of sweets and wine and everything, he came and gave me a hug. He said, George, I learned from you more than I have learned from the university in 3 years. So I said, look, I am looking for a long weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, maybe Saturday, if you allow me to come and sit with you in the office, in the surgery, to see how you treat your clients. I don't have a qualification recognized here in America, but perhaps you can tell some of your patients that I'm a patient, and I'm here to learn some of the healing methods. Would you allow me to come and sit just to listen to how you treat your patients or your clients? In England, we use the word clients. And he said, well, I think that would be difficult, but you're very much welcome to come and stay with us. I said, look, before you go, what was the meaning of Thanksgiving in the States? People who settled down here, I didn't know it originated in Virginia, by the way. That I didn't know.
You didn't know what?
It originated in Virginia. Oh. I didn't know it's the governor of Virginia. I'm sorry, my memory cannot cope with the Old Testament, the New Testament, and American history.
Massachusetts
or Virginia?
No, Massachusetts.
Thanksgiving.
Pilgrims. So what's your name?
The Pilgrims in Massachusetts.
Plymouth Colony.
Well, we went to a place called Harper's Ferry.
That's New York.
That's in Virginia.
West Virginia.
Yeah, and you know, we went, it's a lovely town, and I felt sorry for this man, John Brown, that was hanged by the... Oh, well, you know, they took me around the whole area, to tour the whole area, to give me a bit of American history. Because my brother-in-law said to me, if they ask you about, before they give you American passport, what do you know about American history? And they discover, you know, nothing, they will even withdraw your British passport. So, you know, I mean, I said to him, no, but listen, what was it about? It's about getting the harvest, right?
Thanking God.
Thanking God for what they have received. Yes, and they're still alive. And I said to him, and what is the means of celebration? It's food, right? Mm-hmm. Can you see that in Judaic Christian tradition, this is the way you celebrate your place in creation? I said to him, no, show me something like that in Buddhism. Doesn't exist. I taught Buddhism for 15 years at Cambridge, and I know what is Buddhism all about. He cannot play any game with me. Show me some life in Buddhism. Show me how you celebrate your place in creation as a human being. Show me a religious text like Psalm 8. You know what he said to me? And what does Psalm 8 say? And I said, well, may get me a Bible, because I cannot recite it in English from memory. And when we read Psalm 8, he looked at me and he said, you know, I never read this psalm in my life. You know Psalm 8? Who is man to be mindful of him? You subjected everything under his feet. You made him lower than the gods.
Than the heavenly beings. You crowned him with glory and honor. You made him ruler over the world. works of your hands, you put everything under his feet, all flocks and herds and the beasts of the field.
And I said, you know, when that piece was written, people were worshipping oxes and crocodiles in Egypt. But here is the light of prophecy coming transparent. So what I want to say to you, please don't take the Bible literally, because it's meant to point to two important things in life. Number one, your relationship with God, and number two, relationship with other human beings. So if you take the Bible literally, you will become a crippled Christian. You know? And you know, when I had an accident in Cambridge, I had to walk, what do you call this, crutches? Yeah? And I walked to the faculty. Why are you doing that? I said, a car knocked me from behind. And I said, you know, I discovered that this is very good for the lecture. It's a very good means of self-defense, legal. I used to put one on the table. I said, before you ask a question, look at this. You know. But you know, what we need to learn in our religious journey is our relationship. I'm really distressed about all sorts of things, but you know, I learned from Philemon two important things to cope with distress. I hate that season of Christmas. I really hate it. And when I saw the decoration, I kept saying, I hope it's not for Christmas. Because when I went to see our doctor, our family doctor last year, for just a week before Christmas, found the big plastic inflated, what do you call Father Christmas?
Santa Claus.
I took my pin knife and dude, it exploded. The nurse in the reception came out, it collapsed on the floor, and I was in a state of euphoria. But I put the pin... I know, I put the pin knife in my pocket very quickly. And then she didn't see me. She said, what happened? I said, I think it is my aura. And my wife said, no, you see, my wife is more Christian than me. It's a problem. And she said, no, he put his pin knife on it. Oh, no. You did? I said, yes.
Squeal.
You know, I said, you know, you want to call the police? And she said, yes. I said, please do. And then she looked at me and said, okay, it's $25. And my Christian wife, without thinking, opened her purse and gave the $25. And I said, tomorrow I'll come and do the same to the new character going to bring.
And I'm not arguing with friends.
And you know.
Yeah. You have the two most important things.
I mean, look. Look here, my friends. Please.
Relationship with God.
Oh. Look here. If that is not the Jewish way, I'm sorry, there's no wine. And that makes it a Mormon celebration. No, I'm only teasing you. God. You're taking things literally. Listen, sometimes, you know, I say to myself, the Bible is the book that I love. The book that I read every day, not to prepare notes for you. No. I want the Bible to read me, not I read the Bible. I want the Word of God to go deep into my heart and tell me how horrible or how good. We were doing Psalm 86 yesterday. And the psalmist says, Lord, save me because I am righteous. And you know, our Protestant brothers have a phobia about righteousness. We are not. What do you think, George? I said, righteous means tzaddik in Hebrew. And tzaddik in Hebrew does not really mean righteous. Oh, thank you, right? Thank you. You are a very humble man to kneel to me.
I sit at your feet.
And you know, righteous does not mean actually someone without sin. No, doesn't mean that at all. It means I'm faithful as far as I can to the covenant. And you know, my dear friends, why do you have a hangover about sin in your own Christian communities? Why? That I do not know. maybe I grew up in a sinless community, which is not true. Why sin comes to bother you so much? I don't know. I thought that after taking 6 pints of American blood, I'll understand you, but I don't. All I know is that my hair is growing much faster than the normal time, which means that I must have received the female blood, you know? Could be. Or it could be the completely opposite. I mean, the doctor refused to argue with me. I said, look, I never had hairy legs. Look at that. He thinks it is the medication. Never mind. Maybe I'm getting younger. I don't know. So, why do you have a hangover? Look, in that piece that we hangover in English, hang up for American. Good. Let's become American. Hang up.
Hang up.
Yeah. Hang up is that after you drink wine, right?
No, hangover.
Can anybody help me here in English?
That's a hangover.
Hangover, that's what I say, you know? Hangover when you drink, you know when Peter drank in the Feast of Galilee?
Yeah.
And he drank and became drunk. And next morning he felt very thirsty.
Had a hangover.
And said to his mother-in-law, bring me a glass of water and don't let that fellow Jesus touch it. All right. Hangover is, you get drunk with your own past. That's what I meant. And your own past makes you so headachy. Is that the right word, headachy? I'm trying to speak like you and I can't. Perhaps after I eat my Christmas meal with Carol and the invitation still there? Christmas dinner? Perhaps my English will improve a little bit. Okay. Why is this hangover the painful past? Why Elihu having a go at Job? Please read the handouts. I'm not going to read them.
Well, if that's all we're going to say about the handouts, do read it, because there is some great stuff about discerning.
I will come to that in a minute.
Are you sure?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Because it's really, really good.
And Bob, that section on discernment.
This may be my only shot, so I'm going to take it. Look through it, because there's a lot of good stuff. Don't even read the stuff about Job. Just read the other stuff.
Okay. No. Please leave the papers now. Listen to me. Can we leave the papers now? Please leave the papers now. Listen to me. Why do I say to someone, you are a sinner? And I am better than you?
Oh, that's not good.
No. Because of what?
Well, you're not necessarily better because they're a sinner.
But the minute I say to someone, you are a sinner, I have forgotten that I am a sinner.
Well, you're a sinner.
Oh, I am. Oh, very much so. And I enjoy it. I'm sorry. You know why I enjoy it? Because as Philemon said to me, to be a sinner is the only qualification for the grace of God.
Now that
that
even the more we let grace God's
grace
be abound.
Sin, the more the grace be abound.
Okay, so you know, but you know, let's go to the hangover. You know, not hang up. Let's go to the hangover. I sat with a man today in the morning for 3 hours, going through his old past, things that happened 30 years ago. Am I regret that this was over lunch? Because I don't remember now what did I eat. Truly, I don't remember even the taste of the food.
Did you digest it?
Did I digest it? I'm still alive. You know, I don't feel a desire even to have supper. And you know, in his distress, he is repeating things that happened 35 years ago. So I said to him, what is the reason for going over and over? Because I heard the same thing before. It's almost the third time. What is the reason for going over and over again of things that are no longer part of your new life? What is that self-torture coming from? Why do you like to torment yourself about the past? You know, in psychology, we say it is guilt and shame. Fine. But I'm not going to take that road because that road I have abandoned, not because it is bad, but because it requires a lot of effort. And, you know, I resigned that responsibility many years ago, and I'm not going back to it. But I said, I want to speak to you as a Christian. Why do you take that road very often? Please tell me, because I heard that story before, several times. Why can't you forgive yourself? And he said, what does it mean to forgive myself? I said, three things. Number one, to say to yourself, truly, I did that. And truly, it was bad. That's number two. And three, it is over. He stopped eating and he said, and why I cannot do it? I said, I don't know. I don't know. But let us dig deep down into your own heart. I'm going to ask some questions, and don't answer my questions just in case they are too, you know, sometimes some questions are too personal. Question number one, are you full of pride? Because pride doesn't allow us to forgive ourselves. How could I have done that? Well, I have done it. Are you full of pride? Number two, are you superior than other human beings? And I said, please don't answer. I want you to think. Think of someone whom do you know personally and have the same dark life like you, dark past like you. Are you superior than him? Are you better than him? When you compare between human beings, which one do you think is the worst and which one do you think is the best? And where do you stand between the two? I don't want you to answer these questions. Because I don't want you to expose yourself just in case after I leave, you start to regret talking to me. Does happen. And I said, my last question is this. What do you know about love? Number one, self-love. Number two, loving your neighbor. And above all, loving God. Do you think that God, who allowed you to live at the age of 55, is really the hard, harsh tyrant? Or do you think that he's the one who's full of mercy and love and kindness and let you grow up and he will maybe give you another 55 years to grow up, to mature, to learn more about yourself? What do you think about God? Please don't answer the questions. And it was good, you know, because he started to eat. I looked, the food was very cold. And I said to him, look, my dear friend, I hope we meet again in 2-3 weeks' time. If you can come up with some of the answers, I'll be really interested. Because number one for me is more essential than any other question about pride. Pride. I was once in a car in Lebanon. I'm glad I wasn't a driver. Whenever I don't drive, I thank God eternally for that. And you know, Lebanon is full of hills and valleys and mountains. It's almost like Switzerland. And you know, when there is a road that is just going around one of the mountains, you look down, you see a pit. And the road is just about to take two cars. And so you have to drive very... So I don't drive on roads because I don't know the roads very well. I had a Lebanese friend, and we had a BMW, and he was so full of energy that he was actually, I kept saying, please slow down. I don't want to wake up find myself in eternity or crippled in one of these valleys, you know. From the other side came a bus, roaring. You see, people in the Middle East are mad about speed.
Except you.
Well, I don't drive, you know. I had my own share. And you know, he managed just to stop falling in the pit. Just. And as we stopped, he puts the handbrake on. The car stopped, the motor stopped for unknown reason. And he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, George, we have to push the car." You know what happened? Can you guess? The minute he put, you know, the handbrake. You have handbrakes here?
Yeah.
Okay. Of course you should do. It's a stupid question. The minute he pulled the hand and put the hand brake down, the car slid in the valley.
Oh my gosh. Slid in the valley.
And, you know, we're talking here of something less than a second. Something happened, you know, either the weight of the car, or there were some stones under the wheels that actually stopped us from sliding. And he went all mad. 2 weeks later, he's still living with the nightmare of the car. And he kept saying, "How stupid! How could have I done such a thing?" I said, "Look, it has been done. Why don't you repeat the word of our Lord on the cross? It is finished." Why don't you every time that X in your heart just say, "It is finished. Lord, in your hands I commit my future. I commit every car I'm going to buy." I actually made some contribution to buying the new car because I was a passenger. And you know, I said to me, "No, we Jewish people don't do that, but you know, I treat you as a Christian. Here is some money to buy a new car." It wasn't very big money. Amount of money, but he was rather pleased. I asked some other people also to collect some money for him. We paid for the car and he got a new car. And I said, "Never to go to this area again." You see, can you forgive yourself? Yes, it's finished. And here in the in that handout, the arguments of Elihu are actually quite modern. That book of Job is a modern book. You know, when there is an argument in a Christian community, very often we select a biblical text as a poster and put it in front of the eyes of the people. On page 2, Elihu says to Job, you know, "God is greater than man. Oh my goodness, but this is very true, but God is greater than man, but look at me, what happened to me?"
Which one are you on?
That is on page 2, 12. You know, the quotation from Philemon on page 3 is worthwhile reading. "Do not listen to those who put forward any teaching which is designed to promote condemnation without any reference to forgiveness. A false teacher is that one who leans on any argument to fortify his authority. You can discern this from the form of words used in the discourse itself. Threats, waving the fire of hell, planting fear, demanding submission, and the absence of love are all the signs which indicate and point to a false teacher." Here is a man who has been badly treated by his own community. And he will laugh. He will laugh because, you know, he thinks that at the core of the human relationship, "I never forgot that. Never, ever forgot that." Have you seen a film called The Diary of a Mad Black Woman? Have you? Ah! Do you know? That was my refreshment on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yes, it was.
Yes. After the guests left, my brain is dead, my heart is dead, very distressed. I said to my brother-in-law, have you got anything, you know, good? And he said, yes, I have a film that I saw about a week ago called The Diary of a Mad Black Woman. Yeah, I mean, it's worth looking at, actually. It's a great film. And he put it on, and I said, bring a bottle of wine with it, you know? To go to the cinema of that wine is, you know, I don't like American water. That's Coca-Cola, by the way.
I don't like American water. That's Coca-Cola.
I don't know. It's a woman that has been badly abused by her husband. Badly, you know, the details are really shocking. But then came a moment about forgiveness. Why don't you come here? Is it fresh in your memory?
Pretty much, yes, sir.
Sit down.
I don't want to break the table. I'm pretty good.
You break the table?
I might, it's possible.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Come on, sit down comfortably.
Okay.
If you break the table, I pay for it.
Okay.
$25. The moment of forgiveness, you know, forgive her husband, right?
Yes.
And forgive all the horrible past. This is the sentence, and if I misquote this, you have to correct me.
Okay.
She said, if you don't forgive those who hurt you, you allow them to exercise a power over you.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Exactly right?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. You're wonderful. And then, you know, came a twist in the film deliberately. After her husband has been crippled, you know, and she looked after him, she really tortured him. He was an attorney. And he was shot by one of the clients, and he became crippled. I mean, his legs could not move. And his mistress left him, so she went back to look after him. But in her anger, she really tortured him while he was completely helpless. cannot even defend himself. But then came the turning point after the church service, which is one of the best parts of the film.
Yeah.
You know, I love that that singing, you know, of these people, so energetic, you know.
The gospel singing.
Is it, what sort of service is that?
Oh, just the, you know, well, gospel. It's gospel music, you know.
Hey, great, you know. Better than the Hasidic Jews, actually. The only thing I don't like, there's no wine.
No.
Please don't deduce that I'm an alcoholic. I'm not. I'm not alcoholic. Anyway, and then, you know, she goes to supper, and her husband came to meet the Lord and says to her, I forgive you.
Yes, he did.
And she said, I forgive you also. And after that forgiveness, she leaves him completely and go and marry the new friend she met during the divorce. That was the end. I know my brother-in-law sat next to me and said to me, and what do you think from a Christian point of view? I said, this is really great. I think, you know, I'm not for a divorce. I'm a victim of a divorce myself. And I don't believe in divorce. If you are married, you are married. But sometimes it is a necessity. It is the only solution. Thank you. You can now.
Okay. Doing that.
For a home nurse before she left.
Well, you know, the film doesn't go on, but I think watch the film. It's worthwhile looking at. You know, from time to time, Hollywood brings something good. Sometimes a lot of rubbish. You know, but I think that refreshed me. Now, my brother-in-law said to me, "Why do you think it's a good ending?" I said, "Because after finishing the old agenda, she has the right to start a new one." And listen, my friends, in our journey with life, if two things are missing, we are not close enough to Christ or to God. The first thing is forgiveness, and the second one is love, and they cannot be separated.
forgiveness is an action of love.
Yes, indeed. And you know, forgiveness is what did you say?
Action of love.
An action of love. If we have not experienced that in our life, if we have not really loved and being loved also, I have to, this is a confession, because since you bought that cake, I better tell you something about myself. Meeting you, getting to know you, has prolonged my life. And I really mean it. I mean biological life. Because, you know, after leaving the university, coming into the quiet Carmel, I married the best woman in my life, believe me. I had many students, I had many colleagues, I had get to know a lot of people. But May is God's gift at a time when everything was bleak and dark. And I cannot tell you, I said to you, you know, sometimes you remind me of how Sarah looked after me, with a big difference that you are not Sarah, and I'm not a young kid, I'm even older than you. But you know, in the quiet life in Carmel, coming out of the university, if I had no ministry, not meeting you, getting led to a Christian community, I would have been dead at least a year ago. Not because of my heart condition. Mentally dead. Psychologically drained, if that's the right word in English. You know this word? Mm-hmm. Oh, well. But you know...
Whitewashed tomb.
But you know, get to know us, Bob Walter, Stan, Ellie, Frida, Carol, Joyce,
Marlene.
This lady here sends me a joke every week on the internet. Kit is sitting, standing there. This man who sent me a Hummer car on a card. And the man behind him bought me even a metal one, you know, which I cannot even put my finger in it, a Hummer car. No. To meet Linda, you know, to meet John, is that right? To meet this man, I was at St. Vincent waiting for an X-ray, and he passed by, and you know what he said to me? Holy cow! I said to me, what is that? Who's the holy cow, you or me or what? And he said, no, George, this is just an American slang word, meaning I'm surprised to see you here. Holy cow, so, you know, I mean, with each one of you, I'm sorry, I cannot go over all names, you know. Where is Monty?
He's working.
Working.
Yeah.
Tell him that he's a sinner like me. And you know, with each one of you, including the lady broke her arm for playing tennis, thinks she's young and she can jump after the ball. Is that what you have done?
I can't count on it, that's the problem.
And you know, this man who offers me biblical archaeology, where is your wife? Oh, she came late.
Yes.
And you know.
We're separate.
And you know, I'm sorry, I don't have time to talk about each one, but each one of you has a place in my heart. And Christ is my witness. And Linda, that's not a swearing. You know, that you have given me a lease, is that the right word in American? Lease on life, maybe another 25 years. Even after we finish all the biblical books, you know, which I'm a shrewd Jew, I'm intending to finish from Revelation, from Genesis to Revelation. After I finish that, there will be the good memory. There will be the email, the telephone calls, the meeting in the mall. I met once Joyce in the most terrible place called Meyer. And I go to Meyer because I don't like to be in four walls all day. There goes my poor old wife. I don't like shopping, believe me. And you know, suddenly the place was flooded with light and I see this woman. You know?
Holy cow!
Holy cow indeed, you know? look across the street, I see Ali getting her mail and putting her rubbish in the bin. And when we go away, we say, here's the garage opener, you know. And I said to May, don't give her a key to the house. Though I trust her 100%, but you know, she will go into my office and have a heart attack. Because all the things piled on the floor, and you know, I'm going to a conference in Pennsylvania after Christmas, and my wife said to me, when you come back, you found your office tidy. And I said, I'm going to borrow a shotgun. Don't you dare do that. But you know, here is the great lease on life: to meet you, to love you, and to feel in debt to you for getting out in the cold on on these dark highways to drive. I mean, I just cannot tell you how much I feel really grateful, deep gratitude in my heart towards each one of you. And when I look here and I see the missing eyes, the eyes of the people who do not come anymore, whatever reason, I tell the truth, I go home and I cry. And I say to the Lord, try to be merciful to me, allow me to see them again. Not to study in the classroom. If my teaching has offended them, that is fine. I'm not expecting to be, you know, up to the standard of everybody. But I am not going to mention names. Where is that man? Where is that woman? What happened to them? You know, life, modern life, is like a big machine. It can crush any one of us. And you know, when we are crushed by whatever, sometimes we need a friend. Sometimes we need someone to remember. Now, very quickly, discerning our dreams on page 5, I leave that to you to read. And I really beg you to read it carefully.
And make sure you read the number 6 before it, because that's about, that addresses Job and Elihu talking about Job's dreams and so forth. So.
Now, that text took me at least half a day to put into English, from Coptic to English. And you know, I'm very proud of myself, because I said, this is a gift to people that I love.
So you got something there that nobody else has in English, probably.
Okay. And you know, I would also encourage you to go at the back of the page 7. Was Jesus forsaken on the cross? Now, that was typed at St. Vincent Hospital by the beautiful hand of this lady sitting here, by Ali. Okay, Mr. Archbishop, I am at your...
Well, first I'd like to say, instead of just saying a happy birthday, George, you've enriched my life enormously. I think everybody here would agree with that. So,